My name's Penny, I'm an addict.
You need to speak right into it.
All right, okay. Can everyone hear me okay?
No, you need to speak all right. Further forward.
Okay. Right. I don't really know where to begin, but I guess that I'll start talking about my childhood. I grew up with, I had two brothers, one who was a year older than me and one who was 2 years younger than me. As I grew up, I was very unhappy. I didn't feel like I belonged anywhere. My parents didn't ill-treat me, but they never affirmed me. They never made me feel like that I was a valuable, worthwhile person. You know, the messages that I got growing up was that I was bad, I was no good, I would never amount to anything. What I always heard was, stop crying, you'll get something to cry for. Stop laughing, it'll end in tears. Wipe that smile off your face. You know, it seemed that whatever way I felt was wrong as a child. And what I've learned in recovery, that however I feel, it's okay. You know, and if I feel happy, it's fantastic. And if I feel sad, that's also fantastic. And if I'm angry, it's okay for me to be angry today. Anyway, as I was saying, I grew up with two brothers, one a year older than me and one 2 years younger than me. And then when I was 14, my parents had another child, a daughter, my sister. And my brothers were both addicts, the same as me, and we used together for some time. But I just want to say that the first time I ever used any drugs, I thought that I had found the answer. You know, suddenly all of that negative stuff, all my self-obsession, fear, self-loathing, lack of confidence, just went straight out of the window, and suddenly I felt like I was 10 feet tall, I had confidence, I could communicate, I could talk to people. I suddenly felt like I was someone and I was going to go places. I felt that all my dreams would come true. I was filled with dreams, hopes, inspiration. And what happened? Over a period of time, all my dreams faded, my hopes faded, and my ambitions just died. And the sad thing is, I didn't notice when that was happening. You know, I just didn't notice. And it seemed like one day, you know, I started using and it was all fun, happy, peace and love. And I was just taking speed and acid and smoking a bit of dope, maybe taking a few pills here and there. And then years later, I said, you know, I'm shooting up heroin and Dicanol and all sorts of copious amounts of other sort of drugs. And, you know, what happened to all my dreams and hopes and ambitions? You know, they just faded. And I didn't notice them going, you know. And but the strange thing is that all the time that I was using, I thought that I was doing exactly what I wanted to do. Because of, I didn't know any other life than the life of using. Because of my experience before I used was really sort of very sad and unhappy. So the desire to sort of stop using didn't really come into my mind for a long, long time, you know. And as I said, you know, I used a lot of drugs, and my drug use took me to a lot of places that I'd rather have not have gone to. And the worst place that I went to, which I'd rather have not gone to, was prison. And because of my drug use, and I was also sort of selling drugs, I ended up going to court thinking, to begin with, that I was going to get a walkout, that I was going to get found not guilty, to when I got found guilty, thinking I'll get 18 months or 2 years or something, to actually walking down the steps from the Inner London Crown Court with a 7-year jail sentence, which was really more than what I expected to get. And when I got this 7 years, I thought, oh my God, my life is over. That's it, you know, because why I thought it was over was because I thought it meant that I would never be able to use again. But in a way, my life was not over, because in a way, my life kind of like began from then. You know, my life, because of, even though I didn't have any desire to stop using, what actually happened was that for the first year when I was in prison, I started to think about some of the things about my life, you know, about where my drug use had actually taken me. And when I was using, I actually had four children, a son with one guy, and then later three daughters with the guy that I actually got married to. Now, when I went to prison, my three daughters were actually taken into care and were adopted. So that was and they were adopted with no contact. I wasn't allowed to see them or anything. So what happened when I was in prison, I was working my ticket to get parole. So the thing that I thought would get me parole was that I had to change my attitude towards my drug use, towards my life and everything. And so when I was in prison, they had these H&I meetings in the prison, in Style Prison. They had hospitals institutions meetings, and three guys from Manchester used to regularly come into the prison on a Sunday afternoon, whether it was wind, rain or snow. These three guys used to come into the prison, and I used to sit and listen occasionally to what they were saying. And it's like, to begin with, it was like they was talking, and I thought, what the do they know about using? You know, it's like they looked so clean and smart and tidy. And, you know, they looked sort of fit and healthy. And I thought, geez, they've never used drugs. What on earth have they, you know, how could they ever have used? And it's like one of the guys was actually 7 years clean. And I'm thinking, no way. And then I was actually listened to some of the things that they was actually talking about. And I thought, oh, God. And I began to identify with some of the things that they was actually saying. But I didn't actually get clean then. But what actually happened that with all those meetings that I was going to there was the seed of recovery was actually planted. And what actually happened after I've served about 3.5 years, I got parole. So my little plan of change my attitude and everything actually worked. But I had to go to a suitable sort of accommodation scheme, and I went to this place in Battersea Clapham somewhere in Sisters Avenue, which was a hostel for people with drug problems coming out of prison. And I went there, and what happened was that after I'd been there a couple of days, all the guys that were there, because everyone had to have urine tests. And all the guys had got this thing going where they were doing all these urine tests, and they had these like colostomy bags taped to their stomach. So they all went into the bathrooms with one of the workers and turned their backs to them, got the little bottle, got the tube out, and just pressed the urine in, right? But what happened was that, and they were beating it for ages, they were all using it in there. And then one of them stored some urine in a shampoo bottle, which was rather a silly thing to do, because the urine came out really, really sort of with a great sort of head on the top of it, of sort of soapy lather. So anyway, they all got thrown out. But what happened was that one of the guys told me, just as he was going out, he says, look, I've stashed some gear in my room. I'll tell you what it is. Please get it for me, and I'll be back tonight or tomorrow after the staff had gone. So I said, okay. Anyway, what happened? I went and got this gear for him, and I was looking after it, and I was, you know, I was going to give it back to him, obviously, because it was his, it wasn't mine. But what happened, about 36 hours later, all of a sudden, this gear, somehow or other, has gone to the kitchen within my hand, got some foil out of the cabinet, rolled a piece of foil round a pencil, made a tube, got a light underneath it, and all of a sudden I'm smoking this gear, and I didn't want to do it. You know, it wasn't even mine. Why would I do that? Oh, I'm an addict, that's why. Anyway, so what happened? I used that night, and then 10 minutes after using, I had my coat on, and I was going out to go and get some more, because what happened, just using that much, that once, brought out the obsession and compulsion to use more. Now, my higher power was with me that day because of I didn't know many people who are still serving up. And so I went to someone who I knew was still serving up, and she wasn't at home that evening. she wasn't at home. So I went back to where I was living, went to bed, got up the next morning, thought, what happens there? You know? And I thought, you didn't want to use, you used. And when you used, it made you want to use more. And it then I thought, hang on, that really sounds what they were talking about in those NA meetings in Style Prison. So I went to a meeting that night, and that was actually on the 12th of April, 1988. I've got consecutive clean time since then, so I've been clean for 12 days, 4 months and 19 years. And you have to count every day. Every day clean's a miracle, believe me. And so that's when my real life actually began. My life in this world began that day, in that April in 1988. And my life has really changed during that time. You know, I'm not going to say my life has been fantastic and wonderful every minute of every hour, but there's been some fantastic moments in my life. There's also been some really difficult times. You know, all my dreams have come true, but sadly some of my nightmares actually came true as well. You know, when I was 4 years clean, my son came up and told me that he'd started using. And it was great, it was wonderful, and he was using acid and ecstasy and speed, and it was really great, and it was really fantastic and wonderful. And I just looked at him and I said, Troy, please, be careful, because, you know, I'm an addict, your dad's an addict, your stepdad's an addict, both your uncles are addicts, you know, maybe you are too. And I tried to be loving and caring and supportive to him without being too judgmental, but it was just really difficult, because every time I looked at him, I saw my addiction staring straight back at me. But what happened, within a year of him starting using the fun party drugs, within a year he was actually shooting up heroin. And then 5 years later, you know, every day after he started using, I was worried. I was worried that I would get a phone call to say that something awful had happened to him. And then on the 19th of November 1997, I was on holiday in Eilat, in Israel, and the phone rang, and it was my sister to say that Troy had a coronary that was on life support, and it didn't look good. And I prayed. I didn't know what to do. I just prayed. And I went to the local meeting there to speak to some of my friends. One of my friends came back to the house with me. And while we was there, the phone rang again, and Sarah, my sister, told me that Troy had just died. And it was, you know, the lowest part of my recovery. And what I had to do, I had to organise a flight home, and then I had to come home. And I saw him at the hospital in the viewing room. And he looked beautiful. It's really bizarre. There wasn't a line on his face. He looked untroubled, unworried. And he looked like he shouldn't be dead, because he shouldn't have been, because he was 25 years old. My son. Anyway, what happened then was that my friends in this program looked after me. They carried me when I couldn't walk. I couldn't, you know, when I couldn't do things, they came to my house. They took me to meetings. They took me for lunch. They took me for dinner. My friends helped me. All my friends in Israel kept phoning up to find out if I was okay or not. And the program and my friends helped me. And I survived. I didn't want to use at all. think I thought about smoking a cigarette. That's the nearest to any sort of relapse that I came to. Then, a few years later, in my recovery, I had a phone call from my dad to say that Saffron, who is my eldest daughter, had phoned him. She wanted to speak to me, and she'd left her number with him. So I was really, oh my God, my daughter. I was 13 years clean, and I hadn't seen her for 15 years since the court gave a visit for my, allowed me a visit with my children to say goodbye to them. So I was 13 years clean, and I hadn't seen her for 15 years or spoken to her. And I phoned the number, and I was really sort of shaking. And I said, Saffron. And she burst into tears, and I burst into tears. And we were both crying and laughing and talking and laughing and talking. And we were, oh God, it's making me just bring it all back to me. It was 10 years, no, how long ago is it? It was 6 years ago now, you know, but it's just so, so fresh. And we met on the Saturday after that. That was, a Tuesday or Wednesday, and we met on the Saturday. And I'm thinking, my God, does she just want to see me now? Will she want to see me anymore? I was sort of really projecting into what was going to happen. And my sister had just had a baby, and her christening was the following week. And I was telling her, and she said, I said, do you want to come? And she said, of course I want to come. You know, she said, I want to be back. I want to see my family, you know. And it was great. She just sort of came back to my family. You know, she has another family, her adopted family as well. And she was adopted with her sisters. They were all adopted together. And what she said is that my other two daughters weren't ready to meet me yet because they didn't have as many memories of me as she did. Anyway, so, you know, I've sort of been building on this relationship with her. And then I think might have been about 4 years ago. I was coming back from a convention in Brighton with some friends. We were just driving along the motorway, and my phone rang. And my other two daughters were phoning me. And so I'm sharing this major experience with three of my friends in NA. You know, it was just such a fantastic experience. And they're asking me all sorts of questions and things and talking, and we arranged to meet. And my middle daughter actually had two children. Oh, she has two children. No, she's got three now, actually. And she said, there's someone here who wants to talk to you. And I thought, who? And then this little voice says, hello, Nanny Penny. And it was my granddaughter, Sophie. You know, and then I'm speaking to my grandson, you know, and it's like, it's all happening in this car with three other addicts who are coming away from a fantastic convention. You know, it was such a wonderful thing to actually happen all together, you know. And so I still, you know, I'm in touch with my daughters now. It's great. My mum died 5 years ago. You know, I was there when she died. It was an active experience. You know, I was actually there. It was a very nice experience to actually be there with, you know, see my mum with all her family around her, you know. It was great to be there. You know, one of my brothers was late. He arrived, you know, even though he was only had like a 10-minute journey. It took him 2 hours via the dealer to get there. You know, fortunately, being clean, I didn't have to do that. And, you know, that was very, you know, it's very difficult. Life is very difficult sometimes. But what I've learned is that through working the steps of this program, through coming to meetings, is that whatever happens in my life, I don't have to use. You know, I thought last year was the most difficult year of my recovery. Hey ho, this year's been worse. Last year, I spent so much time going to visit my family in hospital, and I had a major problem at work, and I ended up having to leave my job and go to an employment tribunal, and then had a very small out-of-court settlement, but it was a moral victory, so we won't go into that. And, you know, it's like last year, my dad was in hospital, he came out of hospital, then my brother was in hospital, then my dad went to hospital, and then he came out, then my dad went back in hospital, and then my little latest grandchild was born, and he had a hole in the heart, so he was in hospital, but he fortunately he got better really quickly, and now he's great and fabulous and beautiful. And then my other brother went into hospital, and then my other brother was in hospital for 3 months, and he had throat cancer. Then, while he'd just been diagnosed as untreatable during that time, at the end of January, my other brother went into hospital and just died. An addict, had died of drug-related illnesses. It's very hard. Then in May this year, my dad went to hospital and he died. And then, then 3 weeks ago, my elder brother died. But, so it's all happened in 6.5 months. 3 members of my family have died. My sister is still alive, and my daughters. And I've got some extended family. But it's like the major part of my family has actually died this year. But my dad was 80. He'd had a very interesting and varied life. You know, he was a socialist. He had lots of friends. He was quite an interesting person, even though he was emotionally closed down and emotionally unavailable. He was a very good man. And I can say that with all honesty. You know, I really loved my father. Anyway, you know, life, what I'm trying to say, it's about living life on life's terms. You know, whatever happens, we don't have to use. You know, and it's like I'm going to start and talk about some of the fabulous things that I've done and been to, places I've been to and seen. You know, I've galloped on horseback around the pyramids in Egypt, and I've also galloped around on a bloody camel as well, which was quite a novel experience. And it's fabulous, you know, because of when I was using, I didn't really go away that much. And when I did, all I could have told you about was the hotel carpet, because I would have been like this. And I thought my life when I was using was really interesting and exciting and glamorous. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't at all. You know, I had this fantasy that really my using was about cocaine, champagne, caviar and Learjets. It wasn't. It was pretty seedy, sordid and squalid in South London. You know, it wasn't sort of that glamorous at all. You know, and today my life isn't that glamorous, but it's exciting, you know. Last year, I went to a convention in Johannesburg, but I went and did some H&I service in a women's prison in Johannesburg, you know, and that was one of the real highlights of my recovery, you know, to go into a prison. There was about 35 South African women in this meeting, And, you know, they didn't know anything about recovery. You know, the meeting had just started a few weeks beforehand, and it was just so fantastic to be able to go there and share my experience, to share my experience about being in prison and things like that with them. And it was just fantastic, you know. And at the convention as well, they had just translated the literature into Zulu, and not sure if he was 15 or 16, but this young kid who was 90 days clean did the readings in Zulu, you know, and it was like, wow. It was fantastic, you know, and it's like, recovery is fantastic, you know. You know, I've been to so many different places, and all I have to do if I want to travel is make sure I've got the time off work, make sure my passport's in order, make sure I've got enough money, and make sure I've got a local meeting list, and that's it, you know. That's all I need to go away, you know. I've been to meetings in so many different places, you know, it's unbelievable, you know. And everywhere I go, you know, I'm welcomed with love and respect, you know, and friendship. It's so fantastic, you know. I've been to meetings in all over the UK and Scotland and Ireland, and been to meetings in Malta and Spain, Portugal, France, Italy, all over Israel, where else? South Africa, to Johannesburg, Cape Town, you know, and it's fantastic, you know. It's been to meetings in Greece, you know, and it's like, wow, you know, this is someone who didn't really very often leave the sofa when they was using, you know. And it's like, the thing is about life these days is that whenever I go away or do anything, I can remember everything, you know. I don't have that little thing of waking up and thinking, oh my God, where am I, or what am I wearing, or what am I not wearing, and things like that, you know. Or, oh my God, what's, and looking at myself and finding I've got cuts or scratches or sort of things like that, and I've lost half of my things and that, you know. And today, you know, I have a recall of everything that I do, you know, and it's great, you know. Life is really fantastic, you know, despite shit that happens, you know, because of death is a part of life, you know, it really is. And another one of the most amazing highlights of my recovery was last year. Actually, 1 year ago today, it's my daughter's first wedding anniversary, and my eldest daughter got married last year, and she had two mothers of the bride. Bad luck for her husband's two mother-in-laws, but but it was the most amazing experience to sit, and my daughter arranged this wedding herself, and it was absolutely fantastic. It was at Eltham Palace, and it was really beautiful, and she looked absolutely stunningly beautiful. And that was one of the most proudest moments of my life, to see her coming down this sort of curving staircase, looking absolutely beautiful. And I was so proud to be her mum, and proud to be a member of NA, because of without being a member of NA, I wouldn't have actually been there. And you know, how have I managed to stay clean over this time? I've managed to stay clean by turning up for meetings, sharing as honestly as I can, doing service, and working the steps. You know, it's so simple. You know, the message is just really, really clear and really simple, that whatever happens, we don't have to use, you know. It's really simple, you know. I remember when I was in prison, and they were talking, saying about not using, you know, because I, total abstinence, I couldn't really understand that to begin with, and I kept saying, okay, what do you mean, you don't use, what about Christmas, what about your birthdays, what about Hanukkah, what about this, what about that, you know, and, you know, and I remember my first Christmas in recovery, thinking, am I going to get through this, am I going to get through this, and I did. And it was easy, because I just didn't pick up. That's the thing, you know. If we don't pick up, this really simplistic way of looking at it, I might add, if I don't pick up, I don't get stoned and I don't get all those problems again, you know. All those problems, you know. I don't end up going to jail. I don't end up feeling like shit about myself. I don't have to do any of those sort of criminal sort of things that I had to do. You know, I don't end up having to just treat myself in a way of absolute disrespect and self-hatred. You know, I have today a great relationship with myself because I found out through this program that I am worth something. You know, I found out when I was growing up as a child, I was told that I was fat, and the word that came after fat was, two words came after it, and ugly. And I grew up believing that about myself until I was about 15 or 16. But what happened was that I hated myself, and today I don't. Today I'm a worthwhile, valuable person, and I love myself. Not every minute of every hour of every day, because I'm not perfect. I can still get angry. I can still want to test the domino effect on the escalators. You know, just push one person, they all fall down because they're in my way. And you know you're meant to stand on the right side, you know? Anyway, I digress. Anyway, I'm very glad to be here. I think I'm about 2 minutes away from my finishing time. So, yeah, I'm just really glad to be here. You know, I've got a little bit of fear for the future, because in 3 weeks' time I've got to go in hospital and have a procedure, but it's going to be all right. I'm going to survive because I'm going to the convention in Durban in October, and then I'm going to convention in Israel in November. So I'm going to be all right. I'm going to survive my little operation, yes. And, you know, my liver's sick, but I'm not. That's just the way I have to look at it. Anyway, on that note, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for listening.